This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Millions of Americans are diagnosed each year with some mental disease or another. Post-traumatic stress disorder, schizophrenia, separation anxiety. Each of these disorders, and many others, are listed in a book called the DSM, or Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's the Bible of mental health. Today, the DSM is used by a wide variety of institutions. Courts use it to help determine guilt or innocence. Insurance agencies require it for reimbursement. Reporter Elise Spiegel explains how one man, Robert Spitzer, an ambitious young psychiatrist at Columbia University, created the modern DSM.
Robert Spitzer, who's defined more mental diseases than any other person living on the face of the earth, began his study of human emotion early.
When I was, 10, 11, or 12, I went to summer camp. And my bed was against the wall. And on the wall, I made a graph of my feelings towards five or six ladies in the, over time, went up and down.
Each day, the young camper would carefully plot his affections for the girls of Camp Robinson Crusoe, scratching the results into the rough wooden panels beside his pillow.
That's a strange thing for somebody to do, but that's the kind of person, I guess, that ends up doing what I did. In other words, translating feelings into some kind of a system.
You see, the little boy who graphed his passions onto cabin walls grew up to be the man who revolutionized the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the American Psychiatric Association's official listing of mental disease. The DSM is a big book, filled with long descriptions of close to 300 different mental disorders, each precisely defined with a clear checklist of all possible symptoms. The DSM is considered the Bible of psychiatry because today it's used by practically every mental health professional in the country. But in 1974, when Robert Spitzer was appointed to direct its revision, few in the profession knew about it, and even fewer cared. At the time, it was an obscure administrative handbook with 180 poorly defined mental disorders. John Talbot is a former president of the American Psychiatric Association.
Bob Spitzer came into this field that no one was interested in. No one was interested in codifying diagnoses. It was sort of a thing that got shoved onto people. I mean, this was botany, for God's sake. How do you tell the difference between a three-leafed and a four-leafed flower?
For psychiatry, the question was how to tell the difference between manic depression and schizophrenia. For years, they'd been unable to make these distinctions, to reliably identify mental illnesses. Patients with severe anxiety were identified as depressives. Personality disorders were confused with gross stress reaction. There was no consistency. Everyone agreed that diagnosis was a serious problem, but no one thought that the DSM was the answer. And while Spitzer saw an opportunity in the pages of this small, unimposing paperback, he was more or less alone.
Nobody worried very much about what direction it was going to take. I guess because nobody expected anything, you know, that was going to be very revolutionary. I mean, as evidence of that, I was able to appoint anybody that I wanted, not only on the task force, but also on these, you know, individual committees.
To begin, Spitzer appointed himself head of all 25 committees charged with defining new mental illnesses. Then he filled those committees with a new breed of psychiatrists.
They were young mavericks. Many of them were mavericks. You know, represented a different kind of psychiatry than was, I guess, the mainstream at the time, or that had been the mainstream.
At the time, mental health was really dominated by psychoanalysis, a discipline based on the 19th century theories of Sigmund Freud. Psychoanalysis is really as much art as science, not a branch of medicine at all. Psychoanalysts aren't even required to hold a medical license. But the men and women Spitzer appointed to his committee weren't interested in 19th century theories. They were interested in 20th century science, in words like data and research and empiricism.
The feeling was that the same techniques that were useful in medicine, which is you describe something, you do laboratory studies, that those same kind of studies were appropriate for psychiatry.
But in 1974, there just wasn't a lot of psychiatric research. So the committee's process was based less on the certainties of charts and graphs than on the expertise of the professionals charged with the DSM revision. Columbia University professor David Chaffer was one of those professionals.
They would squeeze into a room which was about half the size of this one. It was much too small. And Bob would sit there with what was then a portable computer, one of those enormous big things, and Bob would raise a provocative question, and people would shout out their opinions from all sides of the room. And whoever shouted loudest tended to be heard. My own impression, as coming straight from England, was it was more like a tobacco auction than a sort of conference.
Tobacco auction or not, the process was incredibly productive. Under Spitzer's direction, the number of mental diseases included in the DSM increased dramatically. Added were some of psychiatry's greatest diagnostic hits, like post-traumatic stress disorder. The committee also revised existing definitions that were too vague to be useful. For example, psychiatrist Donald Klein, who worked with Spitzer, says that in early versions of the DSM, a wide variety of behaviors were grouped under the term anxiety neurosis.
From somebody being chronically nervous, to somebody having panic attacks, to somebody who had to count everything that came past and multiply by three. You know, that's all anxiety neurosis.
But under the direction of Klein and Spitzer, anxiety neurosis got a new name, or rather, several new names.
Panic disorder, agoraphobia, social phobia, generalized anxiety disorder. And these were all distinctions within what was formerly lumped together that we thought had meaningful therapeutic implications, and those terms have held up very well.
Some proposed changes didn't make it into the DSM. Robert Spitzer.
There was some interest in having racism as a mental disorder, which we certainly never took very seriously.
Spitzer says he rejected the proposal because it wasn't clear to him that racism was a mental dysfunction.
Racism, it's hard to say what's not working, and also you'd have to include so many groups, it would just be ludicrous.
Spitzer loved working on the DSM revision, and as time went on, he found himself increasingly obsessed with the process.
I mean, I was married, I had kids, but I was working, you know, 12, 16 hours a day.
He would come in on Mondays having clearly worked on it all weekend.
Jean Endicott is a psychologist who worked on the DSM.
If you sat by him on the plane going to a meeting, there was no question what you were going to be talking about. Three or four of us might be discussing it until one of us would bail out. And he'd say, can I run one idea by you? And I'd say, no. No, you can't.
Robert Spitzer also woke his wife in the middle of the night to discuss possible wording. He personally answered hundreds of letters addressed to the committee, no matter how trivial. And all this work took a toll on Spitzer.
I ended up with a different family because of DSM.
You feel like that?
Well, it's not that I feel like that. I did. I mean, I did.
During his work on the DSM, Robert Spitzer fell in love with his text editor, a woman named Janet Williams, and left his wife and children. Meanwhile, his work on the DSM was plagued by political controversies.
The major controversy was over the use of the term neurosis. Neurosis was a term that for psychoanalysis was a key central concept, and they felt this was a move against psychoanalysis.
For the psychoanalysts, removing neurosis from the DSM seemed a little like removing the concept of God from the Bible. And the list of people offended by Spitzer's decisions grew. He alienated the feminists by supporting the idea that in certain cases premenstruation could be classified as a mental disorder, and the Veterans Administration by including post-traumatic stress disorder, which qualified huge numbers of soldiers for compensation.
There was several times when the whole thing looked like it could be defeated, which was pretty scary.
Still, at the APA meeting in the spring of 1980, the new DSM was put before the Assembly.
The Assembly had to approve it. When the Assembly had a meeting at which I was at, I'm going to get too emotional. Anyway, when they finally voted to approve it, they gave me a standing ovation, which was very meaningful.
They were acknowledging that Spitzer's DSM was one of the most important innovations in psychiatry in 30 years. In fact, in almost every quarter, the new DSM was an immediate popular success.
It was a wonderful for the mood of psychiatry. Psychiatry felt now, gee, we're more scientific, we're part of medicine, we can be proud of this. Well, in addition, the American Psychiatric Association found out it could make a lot of money by selling it. They've made a tremendous amount of money.
Still, in 1988, when the APA decided it was time for yet another revision, Spitzer was denied the job of director. The APA told Spitzer it was because he'd become too personally identified with the DSM, and the document needed to represent all psychiatry. But some believe there were other reasons. Columbia professor David Schaffer.
I think that the APA wanted quieter time. And I think that they felt that by separating DSM from Bob, it would make it a less controversial process.
As a concession, Spitzer was made special advisor to the DSM, which entitled him to attend every meeting, which, of course, Spitzer did. But he often found these meetings emotionally exhausting.
I had this image of, you know, each category being a child, and they were being abused or messed up.
Eventually, Spitzer stopped going to the meetings altogether. He says it took years to get over. Still, he has a lot to be proud of. He's had a tremendous impact on the way that people all over the world understand themselves and their pain. What's odd is that Robert Spitzer doesn't see himself as someone who has much insight when it comes to other people's emotions.
No, I don't know that I do. You know, that's just not me.
Yet you've been intimately involved in mapping human emotion.
But it's a different knack. My knack is taking some things that are kind of like a puzzle and figuring some way to make them into a system. I think that must be a different skill.
And it's not only human emotion that Spitzer has turned into a system. Late in life, Spitzer has taken up ballroom dancing. Like human emotion, ballroom dancing is something most people see primarily as a form of expression. But that's not how Spitzer approaches it. He approaches it like a science. He's developed an elaborate notation system, carefully breaking down each gesture into its component parts.
And I tried to get one of these teachers to use my system because I thought if he could use it, he could hand out, the system for that particular step that he taught. And he very kindly said no, he was not interested.
And as with the DSM, Spitzer focuses obsessively on ballroom dancing. His wife says that recently the family went on vacation to the beach, and one afternoon she found her husband on the sand at the lip of the ocean, meticulously practicing each move, his arms raised to embrace the empty air, a look of stern concentration on his face. For NPR News, this is Elise Spiegel in Washington.